without a gun.
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel
in
there.
Put out all points buttons. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order.
A new world order.
Attention. Attention.
Government is an emergency.
Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones.
Radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Heidi, Heidi, ho. This is the Dutch Jones radio program coming to you from the high seas of the pirate airwaves. I'm not an Ethiopian pirate or what do they call them, a Somalian pirate. I'm an air pirate. Not a butt pirate. I'm a radio pirate. We come to you live every single Monday through Friday, unless we're interrupted by hail, solar flares, or pirates of other kinds taking us off the air. And right here, right now, we are live. It is the first. Oh, I got to tear this off. There, I tear it off. You tear it off the little February. It's March 1st, 2011. It is a Tuesday. I'm joined here with a small studio audience. Lou Stacy is at the local shaman's office, the medical man, the doc. He's actually a hippie shaman, I found out, reading in the paper about him. But hopefully she's just seeing the nurse practitioner. She's still sick. But where are we? This is Kaweah, California. I'm coming to you from Camp Kaweah here at the church at Kaweah. The church at Kaweah is over on the other end of the property. This side I like to call Camp Kaweah. Because if you come here now, that's what it looks like. We have an obstacle course, shooting range, open area for much tent camping for the militia if they ever show up. And it's a nice little experience. And we bring you the Christian militant worldview and slowly becoming a Christian separatist worldview. I did not say white separatist. I said Christian separatist worldview. And if you listen on Thursdays to Pastor Warren Mark Campbell with Practical Christianity, he defines that very well. We've decided that we can't fix the system from within, so we're going to pull back and change the system from without. We're going to prepare. We're going to recoil like that snake on the Gadsden flag and prepare ourselves. And that's what we try to do here. We try to bring you, above all, the Christian message. I may not always do it with a Bible-thumping sound. I don't sound like a preacher, but for one reason, I'm not a preacher. I'm not even a Bible teacher. I'm just a meat-and-potatoes Christian who believes in the militant Christian worldview. I believe in dominion. I believe that we go forth and occupy the world for our Lord Jesus Christ, that there is no king but King Jesus. We are not anti-government, and I'll tell you why I'm saying that here. We are pro-godly government. We are anti-bad government. We believe in the spheres of biblical governance, self-governance, family governance, church governance, and then civil government, which is in the end there. And, of course, King Jesus Christ is above all of that. So, as it always happens at the end of the month, Lou is able to, what is it you do? You just check the website every month, it updates it every month,
yeah.
And we can see how many listeners we've had over the previous month, and this one would be 28 days. So for the past 28 days, we had 10,500 and some hits, and about half of those actually stayed and listened. Some of the people just downloaded things and, you know, got the manuals. Some people downloaded pictures, you know, we have different pictures on there. Some people use it to get to the archives. And we get to see where everybody comes from, not like your specific address, but it gives us like who your provider is, what country you're in. It's not even broken down by state, but the majority of them, over 5,000 hits, came from the United States, of course. And the rest were splattered all over the world, as far away south as Uruguay. And Lou keeps saying it's you are gay. It's not you are gay. It's Uruguay.
It's
Uruguay.
It's your gay.
It has nothing to do with me. So there's that one. And then China, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, India. The second largest after the United States, of course, which surprised me this month, because last month it was India. This month it was the United Kingdom, or England. There really isn't a United Kingdom anymore. Canada. And then it, you know, went down from there. But inside the United States, we had a combined total between military and U.S. federal government computers listening of 92. Now, it doesn't sound like a lot when you figure we got over 10,000 hits, but those 92 government computers, like, listened to everything. They went through everything. They paid attention. Now, let's say that the military wanted some really good patriotic soldiers that are having to use a government computer, so let's throw those away. That still leaves us with, like, 36 government computers that we, you know, when we check to see where they're coming from, it's Washington, D.C., stuff like that. Then there was a whole bunch from academia, from, it said, educational systems. You know, universities have their own intranet and that type of stuff. So we were surprised. So we know who's listening, not, like, personally, and I wouldn't do that even if I did because it doesn't matter to me. The fact that they are listening is a good sign. Like Stacy said before she went to the doctor's office, she's like, well, good, they need to hear it. So even while they're transcribing it, and making copies for all their cronies and all the jackbooted thugs to know who we are, hopefully something will sink in. Somebody listening to it will go, hey, you know what? These guys aren't that bad. They're not doing anything wrong. They're not breaking any law. So those of you that are listening in the government smoky, smoke-filled dark back rooms, you know, welcome. Hopefully you'll hear something that clicks that will work on that stone-cold heart of yours, and you'll learn that you're working for the wrong side. So that was kind of cool. But it was nice because the next, I think last month, we only had like 6,200 hits. So that was a huge one. But we have to admit, and I don't know if she's in there, but a lot of it had to do with the Lane Lawless reporting that we were getting on the Shauna Ford case. I don't think she's in there. A lot of people were coming from the Daily Beast, which was an online, it's like the National Enquirer. And they were doing stories on Shauna Ford and us. The thing they'd have one quote in every story about something I said. It was funny. I was called a wing nut, so that's okay. And then a lot of Phoenix newspapers were talking about Lane and Shauna, and then coming on the show. Like when I interviewed Shauna Ford, they commented the show, and then they put a link to the name, the Dutch Jones Radio Show. So we got about, I would say, easily around 1,000 hits just because of that. When she was found guilty and sentenced. So we may see another drop next month. But it was just people, mainstream people, a lot of left-wingers reading those newspaper articles and going, who's this jerk Dutch Jones who, you know, who's calling her a martyr? I want to see who this guy is. And we could tell because they only stayed for like 1 or 2 minutes. And then they left. They didn't stick around. But there are a couple people that stayed, listened to whole shows, and then sent me nasty emails. So I don't think we'll have them again this month. Because, although we will not forget Shauna Ford, it won't be an emphasis until her retrial comes up or there's, you know, maybe a new trial or, you know, new news on it. And, of course, anyone interested in that is more than free to call in about it. And I'm going to give you the number today. We're not using the hard line today because let me check here. Yeah, it just sounds too nasty and scratchy. Let's use the cell phone number, which is 559-346-8362. That's 559-346-8362. And everything's hooked up here. I got it hooked up. And that's on pot 3, so we're good to go. So if you call in on that, it'll be much clearer. And don't forget the second hour when we're on Liberty Tree Radio, when we switch from just Stronghold Radio to Liberty Tree Radio. We're going to have Steve Klein on, and he's going to be talking about those pirates, the Dutch family that's been held hostage, and how we should actually be dealing with Muslim pirates. It's ridiculous. You know, talking about arresting them and trying them, and, oh, no, we don't know what to do. It's ridiculous. And I told you yesterday what my view was. Anybody who sails into pirate waters without a deck gun and four mercenaries on board, they don't deserve to be rescued. I know there's children involved, and I'm sorry, but their parents have authority over them, and their parents were stupid. And as far as the four missionaries getting killed and executed, they knew what they were getting into. God bless them for doing it, but I'm not going to send in a bunch of young American lives into Mogadishu or anywhere in the Gulf of Aden and risk their lives. And I'm also not one of these guys who thinks we should go over there and carpet bomb it. So I may differ with Steve on that. I figure the ships are on their own. They have a duty to protect themselves. It is not the job of U.S. Navy. See you later. To defend individuals who take high-risk activities. There are insurances for those things. Just like if somebody decides to climb Mount Everest, he falls and breaks his leg, and it costs $1 million to get him off of there, we would make him pay for it, wouldn't we? Wouldn't we? So why should it be any different with a high-risk activity like dealing with pirates? Now, if there happened to be in a non-pirate area and get taken hostage by Muslims, then fine. We go in and we slaughter everybody that's, you know, not an American. That's fine. And if Denmark wants to do something with this family, we should give them all the logistical support, but no human life. You know, I'm sorry. I just, it's a no-win situation for me, and I know I make people mad when I say it. Rigger always gets sad when somebody leaves. Rigger's sitting here whimpering. It's like, loves everybody that leaves and doesn't care about us. He's at the doorway now, like, where'd the guy go? Where'd that guy go? Folks. Some interesting things on Facebook that I've posted. Where is it here? Oh, I'm not on mine. I got to get on mine. I have posted for the folks listening there. Thank you to the folks listening on the download archives from Olima's activities that she puts up. I saw she got it up there, and people are downloading it. I got thank yous again today. Stats on the website. Where is this here? Let me go down here. Oh, this is a great article that I've got today. I'm not sure if Minuteman, El Doctor, or my friend Dwayne sent it first. I got it from three people, and it was scattered about. And, you know, I can tell by looking, but I'm not going to go back to my email now. I don't have the computer stuff. But who actually owns the United States? You know, I'm always talking about how they have debt owed to other nations and how much it is and what they can or can't do. And someone actually sent me an article on it. It's provided by MainStreet.com. MainStreet.com. And this is a right-leaning financial website and magazine. And they're talking about the $4.4 trillion in foreign debt. It's actually more than $4.4 trillion. Let's be honest. You know, it's ridiculous to think that it's not. But according to those stats, this is what we owe and who we owe it to and what they might want in exchange for it because it's of equal value. Now, I'm always saying, oh, they're going to come and take our national parks or they're going to come and take our ports. Well, the amount of money we owe is actually worth more than those things that I mentioned. So here's one for you. And, of course, number one is China. We know it's China, and they own about 20.4% of our debt. This is just our debt. This isn't our T-bills. This isn't the, you know, all that stuff. This is just the debt, the national debt, which is about $891 billion. That's owed to China. They owe, they own one-fifth of our national debt. Now, building on the holdings of its associated territories, China is the undisputed largest holder of U.S. foreign debt in the world. Accounting for 20.4% of the total mainland China's $891 billion in U.S. Treasury securities is almost equal to the combined 2009 GDP of the state of Illinois. Now, that's actually, if you think about it, I looked it up. Illinois only was $630 billion, and Indiana is $262 billion. So if you put those together, it comes to about $893 billion. So Illinois and Indiana is pretty much what China could ask for if they wanted to. Now, as Obongo says, you know, he's from being from Chicago, I'm sure he's going to be a little lackadaisical maybe about turning that over to the Chinese, but who knows? So the Chinese own the GNP of Indiana and Illinois. Does that put it into perspective for you, especially if you're listening in those two states? And that's just what this article chose. I mean, I could probably find other stuff. I think they'd more than likely want to go for something like an oil field or natural gas field or something that we own, well, supposedly own as a people. But that's pretty bad. Japan is second, which surprised me, with $883 billion. You know, they're not that far behind. They own 20.2%, another fourth of it. The runner-up on the list of our most significant international creditors goes, of course, to Japan, with accounts of over one-fifth of our foreign debt holdings with $883.6 billion in U.S. Treasury securities. That astronomical number is just shy of the combined GDP of a significant chunk of the lower 48. So you got Minnesota at $260 billion, Wisconsin at $244 billion, Iowa at $142 billion, and Missouri, which I think, aren't they having earthquakes in Missouri now? That was Arkansas, $238 billion for a combined output of $887 billion. So Japan can own, if they wanted to, if they wanted to come in and send in troops and kick all the whiteys out, actually probably keep you as slaves, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Missouri, and Iowa. Ow, all that corn. And of course, with China and Japan trying to buy up all the world's wheat right now, I remember seeing wheat in Minnesota. I remember seeing wheat fields. I don't know about Wisconsin or the other ones. They grow wheat in Missouri. So that's pretty bad. Four states there. Japan could just come in and say, hey, you owe us. We'll take it. I think that's highly unlikely. How do you think wars start? What do you think Germany wanted Alsace-Lorraine for? Alsace-Lorraine, however you say it, the French territory that was taken after World War I. Because of the coal and the iron ore there. Mercedes-Benz was made there. So it's always about natural resources and territories. Now, three is the United Kingdom, which I said it's funny they still call it the United Kingdom because I don't really know how many territories there are anymore. But at number three on the list is perhaps our closest ally, ugh, I hate England, on the world stage. The United Kingdom, which includes the British provinces of England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland, so that tells you there, as well as the Channel Islands and the Isle of Man. Now, the UK holds only about $541.3 billion of U.S. foreign debt, which is a paltry 12.4% of our total external debt. The amount is equivalent to the GDP, the gross domestic product, that means how much they actually make, of two East Coast manufacturing hubs. One state that you never hear anything about is Delaware, which is worth $60.6 billion, and the Garden State, which I don't know why they call it that. It should be the petrochemical state, New Jersey, at 483 building. Yes, after the island of Jersey in the English Channel, so they're going to get it back. There is a Jersey Island off the coast of England, and now they want it back. The two states' combined output in 2009 was $543 billion, so England could say, give us those two states. Unless I have listeners in either one of those states and you want to put up a good fight, I say let them have them. I'm just kidding. I don't want to give up any sovereignty. Now, this next one is kind of weird. It's called the oil exporters. I guess they're meaning OPEC. Another group entry, the oil exporters from another international bloc with money to burn. It's 15 countries, as diverse as the regions they represent. Now, listen to this. I didn't realize all these nations were in OPEC. Ecuador, Venezuela, Indonesia, Bahrain, Iran, Iraq, Kuwait, Oman, Qatar or Gutter, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Algeria, Gabon, G-A-B-O-N, Libya, and Nigeria. That's probably why we're trying to attack all those nations right now from within. As a group, they hold 5% of all American foreign debt with a combined $218 billion in U.S. Treasury securities in their own treasuries. That roughly equates to the combined 2009 GDP. Now, this is where it starts to hurt, of Nebraska at $86.4 billion and Kansas, $124 billion. Now, those are two states that we need. For food production. And, of course, the OPEC nations need it for food production, too, because if this stuff that may be happening in the next year with Lindsey Williams is telling us about, they're going to need wheat. So the two states produce a bunch of grain for export, which many of the arid oil producers need to trade for because they can't grow it. So that's OPEC. And then here's a country that I thought was in dire world of hurt, but Brazil is number five. With $180.8 billion, which is about 4.1%. The country known for its beaches, carnival, and the unbridled hedonism that goes along with both has made a big investment in the U.S., buying up to $180.8 billion in American debt up to December of last year. That's almost equal to the $180.5 billion in combined gross domestic product of Idaho and Nevada. A state that is no stranger to hedonism. So Brazil might want Nevada, all those casinos, and then want Idaho for the potatoes. You never know, which surprised me. I need to learn more about Brazil. I didn't think they were doing that good. They could be buying up our debt. So when everybody sits around and goes, oh, if it wasn't for us, all these other countries, well, all these other countries are paying our way by buying up our debt. Hong Kong, which I always thought was part of China, but it's an international city, number seven on the list of our foreign creditors is Hong Kong, a former British part of China that maintains a separate government and economic ties that the communist, then the communist mainland. They're not part of China, which is interesting to me. I thought they went back to China. With $138.2 billion in U.S. Treasury securities. Now, this capitalist enclave could lay claim to Yellowstone Park, and our nation's capital. They could have Washington, D.C., as far as I'm concerned. Now, the combined GDP of Wyoming, which is only $37.5 billion, and Washington, D.C., which is $99.1 billion. What do they do in Washington, D.C. that has a greater GDP than Wyoming? Are they counting bribes? Anyway, that's $136 billion as of 2009. So we could give them Washington, D.C. and Wyoming, and Hong Kong will get off our backs. Number eight, which I thought would be higher up, I really did, our neighbor to the north, the weird little country of Canada. Is it French? Is it English? I don't know. They say that a friend in need is a friend indeed, and our neighbor to the north has proven to be a kind and generous creditor. In our time of financial need, they've helped us out. Canada holds about 3.1%. Are we okay, or are we dropping dead?
No, we're okay.
Okay. Right, whenever you start typing, Lou, it makes me nervous. I think we've gone off the air. They're looking to annex some U.S. land to cover the debt, though. The country would have an easy time of it. The combined GDP of Maine is $51.3 billion, New Hampshire is $59.4 billion, and Vermont is $25.4 billion. And that comes close to what we're owing them in the $136 billion range. So we'll just give them our northernmost eastern seaboard countries. Yeah, well, states. And Canada leave us alone. We already gave them Nova Scotia. I don't know why we did that. And then number nine, this one surprised me because I thought this was like Israel. I thought this was the 52nd state, Taiwan. Taiwan has purchased a lot of our debt. Now, they're an island nation, 100 miles off the coast of China. They cause all kinds of problems for us. It's claimed by the People's Republic of China, despite having its own government and economic relations with the outside world. Now, part of those economic relations include the island's holding of $131.9 billion in U.S. debt, roughly equivalent to the combined GDP of West Virginia and Hawaii, which totals about $129 billion. So Taiwan can have Hawaii and West Virginia. Unless we get our spending in check, we risk losing some of our most visually stunning territory, West Virginia, obviously, to our friendly neighbors on the other side of the Pacific Ocean. Now, number 10, this one surprised me because I thought they were coming to eat at the trough, suck at the teat of America's handouts, but they actually own $106.2 billion of our debt. That would be Russia, the former communist bear, our enemy in the Cold War. They're holding about 2.4% of the U.S. debt, and it's about $106.2 billion in Treasury securities, and it's equivalent to the GDP of our sparsely populated North, the combined output of North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana. Now, I'm surprised Alaska must be worth a lot more because Russia would be obvious for them to take. But North and South Dakota and Montana come up to about $106.2 billion also. So let's hope Russian President Dmitry Medvedev doesn't come to collect. Now, I know this sounds farcical to you, and hopefully it got you thinking, but we owe a lot of people a lot of stuff, and they're going to come for it one day, and how are we going to pay them? How do you think the people that control our government is going to say, humana, 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 can I get back to you next Monday? They're going to say no. We want items. We want, and they're not going to take states at first. You know, I'm realistic here, but they're going to say we want a bunch of wheat. As of yesterday, China has banned all exporting of wheat. So is Russia. No more exporting of wheat. Australia's wheat crop has been destroyed by flooding, and they're needing to buy. And guess who's selling it to them? All those farmers out there. All those corporate farms, family farms, the brokers. They're selling the wheat that you and I need to buy overseas now because they can get more money for it overseas, which does what? Raises the price. So that's how they're doing it. They're saying, wait, you owe us money. Instead, why don't you let us have some of this this little grain product here? That's where it goes. Lou, I want you to go to break now. I see Mom coming in, and she doesn't look too happy. I want to find out what the doctor said. And we shouldn't be discussing her medical situation over the air. So go ahead and start playing some Muzak, and we'll be back after the break. And I want to know what you think. What should we give them for the debt? Should we just erase it? I mean, did you know this already? We'll be back after the break on the Stronghold Radio Network. Ain't hardly worth the page it's printed on. The reason is it isn't lawful money. And the truth is stated plainly in this song. Paper money, paper money. It's a federal trick without a treat. It's the source of all inflation and the reasons why your ends don't meet.
Our founding fathers wrote our Constitution, which states that only Congress has the right to print up dollars backed by gold and silver, which guaranteed the future would be bright. Then Congress signed a contract with some banksters. This happened back in 1910 plus 3. Well, those banksters said, we'll guard your gold and silver and issue paper money for a fee. Paper money, bogus money. It's been proven throughout history. It deceives you while it bleeds you, as it leads you down to tyranny. So now we've got this private corporation, which calls itself the Federal Reserve, whose purpose was to strangle our great nation and plunder from us wealth they don't deserve. Now those banksters sit on top our gold and silver, then warn us not to practice guile or greed, and then charge us compound interest on some paper, which they print up any time they feel the need. Paper money, worthless money. It's a nation's curse since times of old. Things won't ever get no better till we make the Fed give back our gold. Those banksters talk about a new world order and why the USA should play their game. Well, let's throw those traitors out and lock the border before we only have ourselves to blame. Paper money, funny money. It's a ticket stub to tyranny. Gold and silver is the answer. It will reinstate our liberty. We the people have the power. We can reinstate our liberty. We can reinstate our liberty.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. Stacy's going to live. The bad news is she's not going to be happy about it. She's still mad that she's sick. You can see it in her eyes right now. She's getting ready to go lay down. No, I'm not going to stop talking. No, I'm not. She's like, shut up. I'm not going to tell them that you got leprosy and you got it off a doorknob. I won't share that with them. See, now she's smiling. But she had to go get some antibiotics. Where's your frying pan? It's in the sink with all the dishes you haven't been doing. I saw you did the dishes, by the way, though, even though you're sick. You have a fever. Go to bed. just go to bed and we're going to paint stuff on you when you're asleep. We're going to do a Hitler mustache. So go to sleep, Stacy, okay? No, you can't stay up here for the radio show. Go. Do you want to take the dog with you or leave it up here? Okay. The dog is not good for sick people. The dog's been jumping all over when she's trying to lay in bed. But anyway, Stacy is back and she's very ill. And she has no sense of humor when she's ill. She's mad at me right now for even telling people that she was ill. And I told her this last week. I said, either you go to the doctor or you do all this other stuff. She's been taking over-the-counter cold medicines, and they pumped up her blood pressure. I don't take over-the-counter cold medicines because I have high blood pressure, too. I do all the weird stuff like the neti pot. And I got sick. It lasted a day or two. Poor Stacy's had it for about a week now. Pastor's had it for over a week. Lou's always sick. He's just a sickly little feller. Yeah, you're sicker.
My immune system is like me, strong.
You're me. Strong. No, you're strong smelling, Lou. There's a difference. Before the break, we were talking about how all these other countries own us, and you guys in the chat room picked up on something that I was going to lead into. Russia has been revamping its military, and they're they're showing off some of their new technologies. They haven't been just sitting idly by. They've used their peace dividend to build bigger ships, better planes, all different types of things. And so when I made the joke about Russia coming over, and I can't remember what it was Russia said they wanted. I think it was North Dakota, South Dakota, and Montana. Who knows? We could have a Red Dawn scenario where they just say, hey, we want the oil fields. Think about all the oil fields, the trillions of barrels of oil in North, South Dakota, and Montana. So we may be joking about it, but that's just the way it is. I believe the number one thing any of them want from us is our food and farm, Sergeant Slade said. That is correct. We have the technology and the vast open spaces to grow a lot of food. Unfortunately, we seem to sell it all overseas. And watch the food prices. We're going to make our monthly trip tomorrow to stock up on food. And I know that because we buy the same things every month with, you know, maybe a 10% variance. You know, hey, that looks good. Let's get that. And we've been seeing an increase each month in the food going up. Not that the prices necessarily go up real fast, but there's been an incrementalism in things, you know, like the Pringles cans have been going up and things like that. So we're going to see the inflation. Sergeant Slade says, what units are here left to defend against an invasion? Well, it would be the militia. National Guards are all overseas fighting somewhere else. They keep pulling our National Guards out, sending them overseas to fight. So, yeah, you're right. Who would be here to defend if not just only the militia? It would be costly. Where I am here, the valley that we look down upon, well, if I went up on the mountain to my right here, is the number one producer of produce in the U.S., the San Joaquin Valley. And it's not densely populated. But the people that it's populated by outside the few cities that are down there would fight fiercely. Back during the War of Northern Aggression, this was a Confederate county, Tulare. And a lot of these people trace their roots directly back even older than that, and they're not going to give in to anybody. They don't even like it when the county board of supervisor tells them what size shed they can and can't build. but it's just like Yamamoto said, I do not want to invade America. There would be a rifleman behind every blade of grass. And Russia knows that. That's why they've been pushing for them to disarm us. It's not like they'd be invading the United States of America because Obongo and they're complicit in this. There's one government already. The New World Order does exist, and they're already all working together. It's us against them. The only reason there isn't a outright in-your-face New World Order is because they're afraid of us. And we've been slowing up their plans for a long time. General Carver says within 2 months you can train basic soldiers. I would say even less than 8 weeks. If I have able-bodied, red-blooded American farm boys, I could teach them to do a lot of damage within 2 to 3 weeks. Just harassment stuff. And while they're doing that, you train everybody else in that two-month period. Because at first, if they do come and do stuff like that, whether it's the jackbooted thugs or China or Russia, we're not going to knock them back. The goal is to stabilize the lines and harass them until we can build some kind of strike back at you strategy. And the other thing, China, they're talking about how many, you know, 90 billion citizens or whatever it is in China. It's like a 500 million man army. You got to realize a lot of those people are not party line followers either. There's protests going on right now in China. It's just they're not talking about them. The same kind of things that go on in North Africa and Wisconsin go on in China. They're just really good at controlling the media. So hopefully, because we do have people in China that listen to this show, and hopefully those are the Christian resistors that we pray for them to be, that when China started exporting a war somewhere else, they would flare up over there and make it, you know, hard for them to fight on, you know, stabilize their home front so that they could put all their effort into the war. Because that's what would happen here. I mean, if, let's say, for instance, we did send our troops into Mexico and Canada, and we knew that our troops were tyrannizing Mexico and Canada, we and the militia here that would be fighting Mexicans or UN forces would also direct our efforts at demoralizing and thwarting the efforts of our, you know, forces wherever they are. That would be part of our role as a guerrilla militia, too. And we would expect them to do the same overseas. Our counterparts in these other countries, our freedom-loving brothers and sisters, Christian warriors around the world. Because I really think that this next war of liberty is not going to be just a regional or a national. I think it's going to be international. I didn't think that until probably the last 6 or 7 months, the way that they're pushing all the pieces around the board the same. So what are we doing in Libya? I hear we got special forces there, yes. I've heard, you know, that we've got troops on the ground in Libya. I'm hearing the same things you're hearing. I don't have any contacts with any military units or anything, but I'm reading between the lines, and we're sending troops all over the world. 136 nations we have troops in. Soldier of Fortune is always a good source for their sit rep for that. And you got to bet you that if anything goes down, those other countries are going to send forces here. You know, you have the NORCOM, you know, Northern Command guys, that they're telling them to turn their guns in to whatever military bases they live at. Anybody that's, you know, permanent party, continental United States, CONUS, they're telling them, hey, don't have guns in your house, turn them in. We don't want you to have guns. We want your families to live on base. You go to the naval base over here, you know, the one that's 80, 90 miles away to my west, it looks like a prison camp. It does. High double barbed wire fence around it, guard towers. For their dependent civilians that live on post. I guess they're not civilians anymore, they're dependents. And that way, it's like Mark Kornke was saying, I think it was Friday, that if their soldiers are fighting overseas and they start to mutiny, they can say, hey, wait a minute, we got your families back over there in Fort Lemoore, or Naval Station, Lemoore Naval Station. We got your families behind barbed wire. You really want to be that stupid? Do just like Stalin did. He'll just take one of their members of their family out, shoot him, word will get back to him, and they'll keep fighting for the tyrant. And we always maintain a naval presence in the Indian Ocean. And you know there's subs all over the place in the Mediterranean. There isn't probably an area of the world that your tax dollars aren't being used to keep an eye on everybody. I mean, let's face it, it's China, Russia, and the United States, and to a little bit, the former, you know, Great Britain, that are the foot soldiers of the New World Order. And whether the Joint Chiefs of Staff know it or not, they are working for Satan. They're working for tyrants, for those that would enslave us. And the subs, the aircraft carriers, they move around the world fast enough. But then again, you look at it, what do they deal with? Population centers, densities, huge population densities. That's why if we disperse across this continent, how much harder will it be for them to secure and round us up? Let them have the cities. Let them have the squalor and the backed up sewers and the food shortages and the crime and the gangs that live there. Let the New World Order have the cities. Tripoli, Cairo, it's no different than L.A., I've talked to people. I've traveled this hemisphere. I haven't left North, Central, and South America. That's all I've ever been. That's all I really want to do. Although I wouldn't mind going to Scotland someday. Maybe South Africa to visit some people that we know there. But in all reality, it'll never happen. But all over the world, it's the major cities are always the same. You put me in Venezuela and take out, well, even the language, and go to Caracas, Venezuela, it could be Miami, except for the mountains. But I'm saying the people are the same. Scumbags all the way up to decent people that hide in their homes. So the New World Order is focusing on the population density, the food production, the commercial production, the industry. And if we disperse ourselves to places like the Kauai Commonwealth here at Camp Kauai, how much farther down the list will we go that they won't even be paying attention to us? Sure, they listen to my radio show. But what's here? They can't grow crops here. There isn't more than 20, 25 acre splotches where you can grow anything here, and the rest is all mountainous and trees and, you know, but of course their officers need to recreate somewhere, and we got hotels. They may use us as something for that. Who knows? You know, we're not Switzerland, but we're the next best thing, right? It's going to be real hard to get in here. So if you think with that attitude, you know, let them have the cities. Let them have New Jersey and Delaware. I know I'm going to get emails on that. Hey, I live in Delaware. Just like I get mad when people say, let's just cut California off and let it sink into the ocean. I'm like, hey, it's not all lost here. I know that. But let them have San Francisco. Let them have Los Angeles. You know, let them have San Diego. And I love San Diego. It's a beautiful city. It's my kind of city. It's not, you know, all great big towers. It's spread out and it's beautiful, but it's still an armpit. It's still a festering, vile sore of inhumanity. I've yet to be to a city over 90,000 that I've liked. And the 90,000 population ones are cutting it close for me. I don't know where I would go if I had to live in a city. I don't know where I would go live. Maybe Fort Collins, Colorado used to be really nice. But even that has bad parts to it. But Denver's just like any other city. And it's only like 2 million people, I think. When you figure in all the little suburbs and everything, cities are cities. So the New World Order is going to have to deal with cities. They're going to, even with, you know, a 500 or 200 million man army, China, they can only put them so many places. The Russian army can only go so many places. The American army, even though we're in 136 different nations last time I checked, we're talking small numbers here. The Philippines are maybe 200. You know, and they're in command and control positions. I know that. But they can't put a soldier in every house in America, period. And support them. Because they put a soldier in a house, they'll show up the next day and they'll be ahead on the fence post. So they'll put another soldier in there and they'll be ahead on a post. And even if they start killing us, we can just keep moving ahead of them. A modern army cannot move as fast as guerrilla forces, period. You know, everybody talks about Schwarzkopf moving an army faster than anybody in the history of mankind, breaking all the Patton's records. Yeah, that's great. But you take away their eyes and ears, which is what we plan to do, and they can't move that fast. And you change the terrain from flat, rolling desert to mountainous 10,000-foot to 14,000-foot peaks like we have here, and everything changes. You don't believe me? Look at how hard we've been fighting in Afghanistan against Stone Age tactics. And have we won anything? We carpet bombed places. Remember what they did in the early parts of the war? They carpet bombed the Tora Bora Mountains to no avail. It didn't stop anything. Really, the only people that die in these scenarios are civilians. General Carver saying there's no way they could move that large of a force across the sea. Yeah, they couldn't move their brute force in one move. Even the United States, when you look at it, they only have a certain number of airplanes, a certain number of ships. And if you're waiting for them on the beach and you kill them on the beach, that's the way to do it. What was Hitler's big mistake in Normandy? Everybody talks about Normandy being this big, great military, strategic, tactical, you know, success. No, it was sheer luck that Hitler was an idiot. He thought everything was coming across at the port of Calais. He withheld his armor. He withheld his reserve units way too long. Had Hitler read the battlefield properly, and this isn't saying that I'm for Hitler, don't get me wrong, but as a neutral general, or as a neutral historian, had he put all of his troops on Normandy and not feigned Norway or port of Calais, the war would have lasted another 5 or 6 years because we never would have been able to mount a counterattack like that. So, and I know the movie never came out, but Red Dawn 2, if the Chinese landed on California beaches, and there are more guns, more hunters in California than any other state in the Union. Did you know that? They issue more hunting licenses. There are more guns in Orange County than some states in the Union. Now, granted, a lot of those are owned by liberals and gang members, and I'm just talking about the legal guns. Let's put it that way. Registered guns in California than any other state. And then let's talk about Washington and Oregon and their impervious coastlines and all the hunters and rednecks up there and Alaska. We could hold them. So I don't get worried about that. I mean, not worried, but I do consider it, but I don't worry about it. I don't sit here and think, oh, poor little pitiful militia, there's nothing we can do. I know what our role is as far as where I'm at. But in general, the American militia, the American rifleman is the most dangerous thing on the battlefield. Because in America, our civilians, other than maybe Switzerland, and even then, train more, hunt more, live in more rural areas than any other nation in the world. And I don't care who you're saying. You tell, oh, well, the Chinese, they live out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, but they live a regulated, regimented lifestyle. Our ranchers out in the middle of Nevada or South Dakota live hard, free lifestyles. And that may be going away slowly, but it's still they're still living that way. And I still say that the most modern army in the world pitched against a bunch of farmers, and those farmers are fighting for their own land, the modern army is going to lose. Now, the modern army will have to turn to horrendous war crimes, like the British did in South Africa, like Sherman did in the American South. Like, I could pick all kinds of things. Just, you know, they just butcher women and children. But if the militia responds appropriately, that's not going to work either. There's several reasons that the South lost. Most of them have to do with factories and supply lines. But they didn't lose because they didn't have the moral high ground. Because the North were their butchers. Grant and Lee were complete total butchers. And the South was not a militia unit, although the South used far more guerrilla units and local units than the North did. The North had massive draft. What did I say?
Grant and Lee.
Yeah, I meant Grant and Lee. Grant and Sherman is what I meant to say. Thank you, Lou, for catching me on that. Appreciate it. But Lee and Jackson and all of their guys, they refused to fight that vile style of warfare. Some may say, well, they needed to. No. We can be like Quantrill, though, and fly the black flag after the Northerners in Kansas and you know, the Red Legs did those horrible, horrible, vile war crimes, and then Quantrill just said, you know what? Let them all die. John Carver says he watched Restrepo. Interesting movie, however. I didn't get the sense those guys even care about the conflict. They seem very fatigued by their experience. If you've been listening to the show, I've been saying, yeah, it looks exactly like Vietnam. What's going on in Afghanistan? Our guys are just rode hard, put away wet, and they're just a fish in a barrel for the Afghans. All their modern technology, all their great training, and those guys, those young guys in Restrepo are in top physical shape. And they cannot fight to win in Afghanistan. And I'm looking out the window right now at an 11,000-foot peak, and behind me, I can still see out the window to a 12,000-foot peak. On the sides of me are 3,000-foot peaks. Ones immediately surrounding me are 2,000-foot peaks. Not this fat guy, but well-trained troops could hold this easy. And there's enough caves and mines up here. They can bomb us all they want, and they'll take a lot of us. But there will always be a large number that will survive against a modern tactical army. It's sad because generals always fight the last war. They're never forward thinking because, believe it or not, they're very conservative in their natures. It's the mavericks like Patton that break out and go, you know what, we need to do this. Let's do this different. Don't tell me it can't be done. Let's just do it. But 90% of the generals do everything by the book, and it's predictable as long as you have the book. Remember what Patton said to Rommel? When they first faced each other in North Africa, I think it was El Alamein or Tunisia. Come on, historians, help me out here. Just like in World War II. In that movie, Patton says it. Rommel, I read your book. I read your book. I know what you're going to do. I know how you're going to move infantry with armor. And the biggest weakness of the modern military is logistics. They have to have wires, supply chains, satellite uplinks. You take out two or three satellite trucks and you blind entire theaters. Yes, they have backups, but that's where study and watching and knowing how your enemy operates. A single bullet put through a Scud launcher takes out the Scud. A single bullet put through the control surface of a Scud launcher makes that multi-million dollar piece of equipment useless. A single bullet put through the generator of the truck that supplies the satellite uplink that works all their, you know, integrated battlefield data collection systems shuts it down. One shot through the block with, say, a 338 or 300 Winchester Magnum or a 50 cal, and if there's no power getting to the technicians in that little booth, that's it. You take out the satellite dish. You take out the technician. How easy will it be to take out some rear echelon mofo when you know where he sleeps, you know where he eats, you know where he worships, you know where he goes for a little hoochie-coo? The Viet Cong did the same thing. Why should we be any different? You blow up the brothels when it's full of soldiers. Period. No, that's not targeting civilians. That's targeting women who are giving aid and comfort to the enemy, or you're not going to win. And that's just the way it is. And I think a lot of Americans have grown soft, both physically and emotionally. I've grown soft physically, I'll admit that. I'm a big fat slob. I'm probably morbidly obese. I need to lose a lot more weight, and I'm working on it. But my mind has still maintained that of a warrior's attitude. And I know what needs to be done. And a majority of Americans would know that if they would just sit down, shut up, stop watching Oprah, stop waiting for the next NASCAR season to start, stop worrying about who won what Oscar, who's going to be bumped from American Idol, and start reading the books, reading history, studying warfare. Because there are some things, that it's good to read the history. Just don't depend on fighting exactly like you see in it. You've got to be forward-thinking and adaptive on the battlefield. Because I guarantee you, finding out where they get their food from and contaminating their food. There's a great story. After World War II, when they were rounding up a lot of the Nazi war criminals, they were putting them in prisons all over Europe, and they were trying to see if there was any value. Project Paperclip, they were looking for German Nazi party members they could use for, like, NASA or, you know, weapons development or to fight the communists, because we saw them as the next big bad guy. And instead of doing what Patton wanted, we stopped and started the Cold War and marched into Moscow. So there was a group of Jews that wanted revenge for their families being slaughtered by these Nazis. I don't know, a lot of people say the Holocaust didn't happen. Well, something happened. I don't agree with the numbers that Israel claims, but they did slaughter Jews and Norwegians and homosexuals and retarded sodomites, fags, whatever. And these Israeli commandos, or what they weren't Israeli at that time, these Jewish commando fighters that wanted revenge, got jobs at the bakeries that supplied the bread to these prisons where these Nazi scumbags were being held and negotiating for their freedom. And they poisoned the bread and killed dozens and dozens of Nazis. I have no problem with that. Somebody kills my family and my government saying, oh, forget about it. Just forget about it. They killed your wife and kids. They can help us. We're gonna negotiate with these Nazis. That's New World Order stuff right there. I would have done the same thing that the Jews did. I'm not going to knock them for that. That was great thinking. So why should we forget to think like that now? Are we any less deserving of existence, of freedom, of liberty, that we should all know we shouldn't be thinking like that? We shouldn't be thinking about crushing skulls and poisoning water supplies where the troops drink from, blinding them with syphilis. I think there were plans during World War II, definitely during Vietnam. I don't know how many soldiers were taken out of the fight with venereal disease, but it was a pretty good plan the Viet Cong had. Especially with young soldiers, they're always thinking with their other head, so it's always good to go after that weakness. So that's where we should be at now. I keep telling you, we're entering different phases. I've got my gear. I'm sitting here. I'm as armed as I can afford to be. And now I'm working on my body and my mind and my battle plan. That's what I'm doing. So it doesn't matter to me if the economy collapses tomorrow. It just means I'm going to have to start eating wild game and growing my food and making what I've stored stretch out as long as I can. Nothing's going to change for me. And it doesn't matter if it's the Chinese, the Ruskies, the Muslims, the New World Order, the Masons. I don't care. I don't care if it's Ronald McDonald. Whatever enemy God puts before me, I will fight with the full fierceness of my entire mind, body, and soul. And you've got to be ready to do that. It's easy to get distracted with all these little things, who's going to run for president, what bills, when they're going to come for the weapons. If you accept the fact that, yes, they're going to come for the weapons, yes, they're going to come for us, yes, they're going to stop freedom of religion, yes, they're going to control the food someday, and you get that out of your mind and stop worrying about the other shoe to drop and just start focusing on how you're going to respond to it, it'll make this battle much easier. It's like waiting for a punch. If you're in the beginning of a fight and you're sitting there and you're waiting for the punch to come and you keep closing your eyes and flinching, waiting to get slugged in the head, you're not going to be any good. You're not going to be able to defend yourself. But if you go into it knowing, hey, I'm going to take a few licks in this, but I'm going into it with my eyes wide open and I'm going to slaughter that guy. He may get one or two punches into my head, but I'm going straight for his eyes and throat, and he's going to be crying on the ground when this is over. That's the same attitude you have to have with whoever the enemy of liberty is. They'll manipulate these wars, they'll manipulate these crises, I guess is the plural, to wear us down and destroy us. And they will only strike when they think we are at our weakest. So what do we got to do? Make it look like we're weak, but be strong. Sit here and complain about the economy, complain about politics, but all the while realizing that stuff doesn't really matter. What really matters is, can you defend your community? Can you move at a moment's notice? Can you be a real Minuteman and have your whole family the same way? People laugh at me because everywhere I go, we have supplies and weapons. We have supplies and weapons. Oh, you're paranoid. Okay. Tell me I'm paranoid when you're being dragged into the street because you don't have a weapon. Tell me I'm paranoid when you're huddled in a basement coming to me going, can I have an MRE? Well, where's your MREs? Well, I left them at my cache. I didn't think I needed them. So don't call me paranoid. I'm prepared. I'm sure you folks get it. But we found out there's 10,000 people that listened last month, 10,500 and some. Not all of them get it. So we got to talk to them, too. So we're going to be back after the break on Liberty Tree Radio. This is Stronghold Radio. Don't go anywhere. We're going to have Steve Klein on from Code 20, from Abolish Islam, Christian Defenders, all that rolled into one. We're going to talk about, I think, the Somali pirates and how to deal with them and the ethics of should we bail people out. Now, I may differ with Steve on this. Should we go bomb Somalia? Some of you may scream yes. I don't think so. If people want to go over to Somalia, let them go, but that's on their own ticket. I'm not going to tell somebody they can't go, but don't come crying to me when you need help. So you've been listening to Stronghold Radio coming to you from the church at Kaweah. Check out DutchJones.info, DutchJones.info, DutchJones.info. And remember, it's spelled Jones, J-O-E-N-S. We'll be back after the break.
Start me with 10 who are stout-hearted men, and I'll soon give you 10,000 more. Shoulder to shoulder, and bolder they grow as they go to the fore. Then there's nothing in the world can halt or mar a plan. When stout-hearted men can stick together, and more.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
Government. There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all point bulletins. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new
attention.
World order. A new world order.
Attention. This is an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Dutch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Welcome, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, patriots of all ages, militia members, Christian warriors, crusaders, Code 20 members, Christian crusaders, Christian defenders, all you folks who sit down at the table and want to talk about the holy cause of liberty. Doesn't matter who your enemy is, doesn't matter who your foe is. If they're an enemy of yours and you're a Christian warrior, they're an enemy of mine. And well, it's Tuesday, and that can only mean one thing. It's time to talk about Code 20, abolishislam.com, Christian Defenders, that whole ball of information there. And that means Steve Klein. Are you there, Steve?
Hey, I'm here. We did a great Code 20. We went out to about 5,000 high school kids today, and we passed out hundreds of tracts, information on Muhammad the pedophile. We had a very funny picture of Muhammad the adult with his big gray beard and little Aisha, little tiny girl in a burqa and a veil with a pacifier in her mouth. And the tract or the flyer started off with sex with a four-year-old girl because Muhammad had sex with a six-year-old girl. Ugh. And when the kids walked by and they saw that picture and they saw the first sentence, they were just stunned. And Code 20 was off and running. One Muslim tried to get into my face, but the old Dutch Jones trick, we turned him inside out, flipped him around. He didn't have a clue. The other kids were laughing at him, and he just made a total buffoon of himself.
That is awesome. That's great. Now, what was this? This was your Belinda?
This one we did in Riverside County, probably about 80 miles east of your Belinda, and we're continuing. We figured the best way to do Code 20 is to break through the stupidity of multiculturalism and diversity in public high schools, because all we're really getting is old people. So we came to the conclusion we got to find young recruits.
Educate them.
So sex sells. Let me repeat that. Sex sells. And let me repeat that one more time. Sex sells. So we put together a real simple but really explosive, sexually titillated, if you will, almost prurient interest of getting the kids' attention to look at it. And then we ended the track with, hey, look, Islam is based on what Muhammad would do. If he had sex with a six-year-old and Ayatollah Khomeini had sex with a four-year-old, do you really think this religion has got any dignity at all? And it was, you should have seen the groups of kids, 5, 10 in a group, and there was about 7 or 8 of these groups as they were waiting for their parents to come pick them up, and they were looking at this flyer and looking over at us, and it was just like when you went to the outreach with the Muslim Brotherhood. It was, if you do it right, think it through, you use Code 20, you use battle planning, SMEAC, situation, mission, execution, administration, command and control, keep it simple, boom, we kicked ass and took names. I'm going to repeat it. I want men out there, I'm going to tell you, I want men. We're going to kick ass and take names. If you're too much of a woman that you can't handle kick ass, then don't join our group. Just don't join. We don't have time for weasels, whiners, and bedwetters.
Yeah, if you're somebody that says, you know, I have problems with exerting myself and I have problems with expressing myself, maybe if I join one of these groups, I'll be able to do that. No. You go take care of that somewhere else. Go be a promise keeper or whatever those guys are. You know, deal with your own inhibitions. We need people that are willing to stand shoulder to shoulder and in your face to the enemy. I don't want to have to worry about a wink link when we're going to a mosque. I don't want that.
Yeah, you go to a mosque, that's going pretty far out there. You need to have your act together. Hey, I'm going to read from Romans 13, 3 and 4 for all the sissies and bedwetter pastors out there who can't handle this. Romans 13, 3, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to the evil. Wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger, a revenger, a revenger. Vengeance is mine, thus saith the Lord. But in Romans 13, 3 and 4, God is delegating revenge based on the law written on the heart to the civil magistrate, and finishing it, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. And then back to chapter 11 of Hebrews, chapter 11, verses 32 and 33 and 34. And what shall I more say? For the time would fall me to tell of Gideon. Now, Dutch, didn't Gideon kick ass and take names? He had 30,000 guys. Yeah, he threw out 99%, leaving him 300, and he beat the piss out of the bad guys, right? Then we had this dude named Barak, and if I recall, Barak, he went out. He was a little bit shamed. The chick was in charge. But there was one really brave chick, and she drove a tent peg through this barbarian's forehead, and she gets all kinds of glory. Then we have Samson. Yeah, Samson made some mistakes, but Samson was a man's man. Hey, if you're a pastor wearing a pink shirt and a pink tie, hang up, go elsewhere. Jephthah and David. David, dude, the guy cuts off a guy's head. He kills thousands of people. He goes out and he steals from the Philistines, which is the root word for Palestine, the secret for making iron swords, and then he goes and what's he do? He carves all these punks up. And, hey, he's in the Hall of Fame in chapter 11 of Hebrews, verse 33. Who through faith subdued kingdoms. Kingdoms? Isn't that politics?
Mm-hmm.
Brought righteousness, which means law, means equity. Obtained promises and stopped the mouths of lions. Now, I know Lou, he can stop the mouths of lions. I don't go that far anymore. I'll leave that to Lou. Lou can handle that, right?
Yeah, let the young guys carry it.
There we go. In verse 34, here we go. Quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness, were made strong, grew valiant in fight, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. What does that mean? Well, I'll tell you. If I was briefing for the Marines, I would say it beats the pooey out of the bad guys, but since I'm on Christian radio, we kick the enemy's ass. How's that?
Yeah. And it's anybody who says it's not the American Christian way to do that hasn't truly studied the Bible, hasn't studied history, hasn't studied the great defenders of the faith down through history, and doesn't follow Jesus. You know, this passivity thing that has crept into the church, that we are not to go after interlopers in our land who disobey the landmarks of our fathers and don't obey the boundaries that God set up as nations. God ordains nations. Men just fill the seats. And we need people who are willing to realize and go back, you know, 200 years, well, maybe not that far, 100 years into the psyche of the American male and regain that bearing. And that moral compass, that Christian moral compass, that we are here to fight, that we're here to defend our way of life against all enemies.
I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man. Well, he may not have been a Christian, we know him, Thomas Jefferson. That's in the Jefferson Memorial. Could you imagine going on radio or television or at Congress now and hearing everybody going, oh, that's hate speech, that's hate speech. I have sworn upon the altar of God eternal hostility I have sworn upon the altar of God, eternal hostility. That's not eternal friendliness, eternal let's hug, eternal, oh, my inner child. No. Eternal hostility against every form of tyranny over the mind of man, which leads me into, let's talk about our Code 20 and your shooting range, March 12th. Let's talk a little bit about that, $100 and the time and what we're going to do, okay, the Alpha and the Zulu and whatnot.
Sure, March 12th, coming up. It's already March 1st, so you got 11 days. You got to contact me. I don't know how many people we have signed up yet. We have a lot of return students because it was that good. You show up here, get here before 10 a.m. because we start promptly at 10 a.m. And those that are already taken a class will be given their own group. And then the newbies will be taken out to the range, and I will teach them a basic, very basic pistol awareness, firearm safety, muzzle awareness. And then if I see that they can be taken farther along in that two-hour period there, we'll do that. And then we'll switch after 2 hours. And meanwhile, the other class will be getting more advanced cell warfare training, more advanced guerrilla warfare tactics. And then we'll switch, and we'll break for lunch. We're going to get tacos and burritos. If you want to buy into that, it's $8. Just bring something to drink. I think the church may even have sodas for like $1 or something. I don't know yet. But I always just drink water. But then we'll have the second class in the afternoon out on the range. And then after we're done, there will be open range time, supervised open range time, where you can come out with weapons that you've brought, or if you want to fire something that we have, that can be arranged, and you can figure out, especially those of you that don't have firearms, and you want to know, what do I get? We'll have everything from 22s to 44 Magnums to AR-15s. We may even break the pellet guns out this time. I want to show off Lou's 22 caliber guns that'll drop a deer. They're spring-loaded, right? They're not really air guns. They're spring, aren't they? Or are they air? I don't know. I'll let Lou do that. But we'll just a good all-around. The shooting range, we've got barricades for you to shoot around. We've got obstacles for you to shoot around. It's nice. It's been resurfaced. And it's rain or shine, folks. It's rain or shine. Now, March is traditionally a rainy month here in the mountains. So bring rain gear, because you're going to be out in the rain, because when calamity calls, you think it's only going to call when it's a bright, sunny Sunday afternoon and you're in the park? No. I won't make you roll around in the mud. That comes in later, maybe the sixth or seventh installment. I'll teach you some rifle positions and stuff in the prone. But for right now, it's going to be simulated on your own property in your own house. You've been engaged. And what you need to do, the moral, legal, social, biblical implications of warfare, you're going to get a lot of repeats. Because we want to make sure you take away from this class not just what your rights are, but what your duty is as a Christian warrior. And the class is open for women, even though we're looking for men. We open it for women because we realize, well, we're out fighting on the front line. The scum that we're fighting will attack the rear, just like Sherman attacked and burned the civilians in the South. That'll happen again. So we want you guys to be able to have our backs. So the ladies and kids, and so we're looking forward to it. I'm glad to hear, when just before he came on the air, Steve was telling me that we have a lot of repeat people that want more, and I love it because I want to teach more. I don't want to just be basics. I don't want to give everybody milk. I want to give them meat, just like with the scripture. I want to give them some skills that they will be a menace to evildoers.
Absolutely. Menace to evildoers. A couple things on the rain gear. And the mud, rest assured, when I teach cell warfare, guerrilla warfare, if I go out, number one, it's going to be at night. Number two, I'm going to look for the worst weather I can find with rain, snow, fog. I want myself and my men protected. And we will go out, and it will be just exactly what I did in Vietnam. And then I've come through Dutch and his son, Lou. Some folks sent me some information about air rifles, and of course my imagination started running wild, and I went, well, I imagine that it has no muzzle flash, correct?
Right, no muzzle flash. It's about the same sound as a 22 going off.
Okay.
It's mechanical, so it's different. You're not going to get the supersonic crack, but it's just like a crack, and it's a weird sound. Yeah, Lou just said like a spring sound, and we love it because we use them up here to shoot woodpeckers, and they don't even know what's going on.
Good. Yeah, with the air, one of the at nighttime, you can't use, a lot of people don't realize this, you can't use your sights. If you use nods, they may or may not work. If you're in inclement weather like fog or heavy rain, are going to be limited, really limited. So your target is muzzle flashes. When I was in Vietnam, muzzle flashes. It's funny. Some guy called me today. He was asking me some questions. He said, when you saw people killed, did you, and he asked me, what did it look like? And I said, wait a minute, I was in Vietnam. I said, 100% of my battles were nighttime. We got overrun one time where the flames were going, but the way the NVA, the North Vietnamese Army, were, they were still in the shadows, and I could see them working on each other, and the next day we saw huge blood pools, but I never saw somebody actually, like, daytime fighting. World War II, Korea, Revolutionary War, Civil War, we couldn't see it. So if you're fighting at nighttime, the worst thing you want is a muzzle flash. Mm-hmm. You can make loud noises once you're engaged with the enemy because it's still confusing where is the noise coming from. But once they see the muzzle flash, boom, it's everybody zeroes in on that muzzle flash. So if you're shooting an air rifle, for example, I was looking at a 45 caliber, some kind of a Sam Yang, I think it was called, and it shot a 45 caliber, and at 50 yards, I think it was, would kill a buffalo, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, they're pretty...
I was looking at it.
Yeah, they're like 180-grain bullets, and they move it...
200-grain bullets.
Okay, that's a 200-grain... How many feet per second is it? 730 feet per second. So that's like a 45
pistol.
Yeah,
when you got 200 grains of 730 feet at 50 yards. And right now, remember, we're talking nighttime. You don't have sight. You're not going to sit there with a scope 500 meters, and you're going to be in heavy brush. So 45, 200 grains cry is going to help get you to the target. So this air rifle is only $600, so I'm pretty sure I'm going to buy that. And it's a six-shot repeater, so I went, well, you know, you could have like a AK-47 or a M4 30-round magazine when everything falls apart, you know. But people are looking at your muzzle flash, and remember, you can't use your sights, but if you had a six-shot 45 caliber crashing in at 730 feet per second, and you got six shots and nobody can see your muzzle flash?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Well, in
dude,
fact,
you own the battlefield.
For those of you that don't realize it, they were used in the American Revolution. They would have these large spherical bladders of a type, not bladders, they were rigid, and they could get four or five shots at them. Lewis and Clark carried along a repeater and just intimidated the heck out of the indigenous savages when they saw that they could fire 12 shots and cut a tree down. With I think that one was a 30 caliber, but
that's the explorers. It's not me and a friend named Clark.
No, yeah, that's not Lewis and a guy named Clark. He didn't do that. But in 1803, there was the American Revolution. There were snipers that were doing it. Man, I keep losing power here. I've got to move my feet here. Hang on, guys.
All right.
There we go. Okay, something's wrong here. Hang on, Lou. Tell some jokes while I plug this in better. We've got weak plugs in an old building. So, okay, I think we're okay now. But, yeah, air guns have long been used. Napoleonic Wars, they used them. And, in fact, there's stories of times that snipers took some decisive shots in the American Revolution with air guns. So people kind of poo-poo them. Yeah. But we're not talking about a Daisy Red Ryder repeater.
No.
These are made for killing wild boar and stuff.
Yeah, they're bad news. And it fits right in with Code 20. Sadly, our friends, I was looking, you know, at the map. All the people are zeroing in on us. I see English Defense League, European Defense League are monitoring us. People in Australia, China, all over the place are monitoring us. So, unfortunately, I guess you can't buy air guns over there. And, Dutch, you were saying bows and arrows. They got to lock them up in a sports center over in England?
Yeah, we have listeners in England and Scotland that have told me that if they have a crossbow or a high-powered compound bow, it has to be maintained at the hunt club. You can't take it home. And, in fact, I was told that they can't even have real swords in their coats of arms in their houses. They have to be like, fake theater swords. They're not even allowed to do that. So they're disarming the Europeans much more rapidly than they're trying us. And, unfortunately, the Europeans are going willingly.
Yeah, that's the one thing I just state. When they pry my cold, dead hands from my rifle. And that's a loving thing. That's a loving statement because it keeps creeps like these Muslims who want to have sex with 4-year-old and 6-year-old girls. We've got the proof. send Dutch an email. He will send you the URL to the YouTube. It's in the Hadith. We've got it all documented.
Mm-hmm.
You can watch my TV show Thursday night, ATVSAT.com. I show that YouTube video because it really wakes up the Americans, especially the women, when they see that. The other thing in Islam now, we know that they do those that crazy, insane act called clitorectomy on the little girls.
We've got mutilation, yeah.
Yeah, the mutilation. We got evidence where the women hold the little girl without an anesthetic, and they're holding these screaming little girls. I mean, the whole thing is a bunch of blankety-blank perverts, and that's, you know, what would Muhammad do? What would Satan do? He would just destroy and beat everybody. So we're having a lot of great success. We did a Code 20 today. We had a bunch of people there. They're starting to figure it out. In Connecticut, we've got a real active Code 20 group that's going with guys who speak fluent Arabic, read, write, and speak it, and they're like us. They don't like Islam. They're investigating and watching the Muslims. So we got a lot of good stuff. We got the statistics coming in. Dutch is getting close to 10,000 people listening to his show. Now, compared to Rush Limbaugh, that sounds like a small amount, but hey, there's only, once again, there's only 172,000 Marines in the whole United States Marine Corps. Rush Limbaugh has what? He brags 20 million listeners?
Yeah.
Well, 172,000 is a small fraction of 20 million. So for us to have 10,000 doing what Dutch is doing, or my television show is up over a million people, they are being taught the biblical correctness of war. They've been taught over 14 centuries they have to be passive, they can't fight, they can't resist evil. Now, when it says overcome evil with good, frequently killing people is good. Killing people, if you look at Revelation 19:11, Jesus himself is going to kill millions, if not hundreds of millions, if not billions of people in Revelation 19:11. So if it's okay for God, a.k.a. Jesus, the second person of the Trinity, and as long as we follow the law written on the heart, the Ten Commandments that Jesus himself, God, gave to us, we've got no problems. And we've talked about that earlier with the Declaration of War, and we talked about the Department of Defense document that says that the Constitution is based on the law written on the heart and the Ten Commandments. And once again, we're back to pirates. We had four people murdered by pirates the other day. There was another group of people captured by pirates today. And Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10 of the Constitution says you kill them in accordance with the law of nations, which is the law written on the heart. Dutch and I have talked about that. When Dutch is on the range, he reinforces that with the people and tells them, look, you follow the rules of engagement based on the Ten Commandments, the law written on the heart, but when that SOB is trying to kill you, you kill him. That's overcoming evil with good. If you do not protect your wife or your children when the Muslims are coming to rape and murder them, and all you do is pray, that is not in accordance with the law written on the heart. That is not in accordance with the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not murder also means that thou shalt lay down your life. No greater love hath any man than he lay down his life for his friend. You will lay down your life to kill the perp because it's a loving thing to do for your wife and your child. Dutch teaches that. I teach that. And our two soldiers who were in combat teach that also. March 12th, I hope you can make it.
Yeah, it's what's exciting about it is I've been to a lot of classes, and I will continue to take classes from other people. You never stop learning in this type of field. I'll take constitutional law classes. I'll take history classes. I'll keep doing it. And I also continue to take tactical and strategic planning classes and fighting classes, everything. And the one thing that I see missing from every class I've taken, with the exception of one, is that you have more than a right to take the life of an aggressor. You have a duty to take the life of an aggressor, because if you do not take that life of that murderer, you are complicit with every future victim they have. That's why this nation has fallen into shame and displeasure with the Lord, because we don't put baby rapers and murderers to death anymore. Even in the states that have the death penalty, it takes forever. The Bible says that they will swiftly be put to death. And so you've got to get over that mindset. And although the Code 20 stuff, 99.9%, that'll never be an issue. It's just a matter of self-defense and being smart and streetwise and protecting the people when you're out in these public outreaches and in-your-face stuff. But you have to have in the back of your mind that when the rubber meets the road and things start getting nasty, you've got to prepare your mind for that ahead of time. That's not something that you want to discuss in a split second while you're throwing a punch or swinging a baseball bat or get your finger on that trigger. You need to consider these things before the situation arises.
Absolutely. And that brings us once again back to our training. We're using the Modern Warfare acronym of the United States Army and the United States Marine Corps. We're talking about war, so let's define war. What is war? War is imposing your morality, our morality, my morality, based on the law written on the heart, on those who want to murder, rape, kill those without provocation. So war, really, what Dutch was saying, and I'm saying, if somebody attacks you, you don't think about it, then you go for the throat, you punch them in the throat, or if you have to kill them, you do that. But you're actually imposing your morality on you, on them. They're imposing their morality on us. When they come to rape our wife and kill our children, they are imposing their morality. We are the kafir, in this case, Islam. And Islam says, since Dutch and Steve, Lou and Stacy, my wife, you and your wife or your husband, we exist, we're ipso facto, which means by the fact itself, because we exist and we are kafirs, infidels, we are automatically guilty. So that under Islam, they can go out and they can blow up trains, buses, they can blow us up, and they're not the guilty one, we are the guilty one. When they raped that little girl, Laura Logan, in Egypt a couple of weeks ago, the Muslims that raped her were doing properly in accordance with Sharia law. It was Laura Logan who was the perp, and she got what she deserved under Islamic law. So defining war, if they come to rape our women and murder our children and burn our churches up and kill us, and they are imposing their morality on us, we say, no, we're going to kick your ass. We're going to impose the morality of Jesus. Agape is the fulfilling of all law, Romans 13:10. I know that people are monitoring us who are alleged intellectuals like, what is it, Southern Poverty Law Center and other people like this who are pseudo-intellectuals. They have no clue what I'm talking about. And so when I talk about Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10, the Law of Nations, they go running. They don't even have the documents like Blackstone's Commentaries, Book 4, Chapter 5. And I'm going to repeat that because I know these knuckleheads are listening. Blackstone's Commentaries, Book 4, Chapter 5, on offenses against the law of nations, and it tells you what to do with pirates. You just kill the SOB. And then if you go to Hugo Grotius, the father of international law, you look at his book, The Law of War and Peace, in the first 20 pages, you will see multiple times where he says that the law written on the heart for individuals is the law of nations for the nations, and that they work together. A lot of people think, well, yeah, that was 400 or 500 years ago. No, that was the basis of the Nuremberg trial. And that's the basis when we look at the Civil War and the war crimes there, that we can actually go back and look at Sherman and the other guys when they went beyond the law of nations, and they could have been brought up on charges, but they got away with it.
Right. Well, it's so time for a break here.
Take a break.
Okay, I don't want to interrupt you. I love letting you go when you're on a roll, but we've got to do something to raise some funds and sell some stuff. So we'll be right back after this break.
And
I'm going to turn you down here. And we will be right back on Liberty Tree Radio. And we're coming to you from Stronghold Radio in Kauai. We'll be right back with Steve Klein and Code 20. When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee.
So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. Back. This is Stronghold Radio, coming to you over our big sister network, Liberty Tree Radio. And without further ado, we're going to continue with Code 20 Tuesday with Steve Klein. Are you there, Steve?
I'm here. How's the sound? Okay?
Yeah, it sounds better. Sounds much
good.
Better. So, but good. We're continuing on. We're talking about a duty to kill, a duty to stop murder, a duty to stand up for your faith, your family, your church, your nation, your people, your kin. Whatever it is, you have a duty to do it. It's not just a right. And that's one thing that I tend to differ with a lot of the Patriot movement. They're like, the Second Amendment gives me the right to carry this gun and defend tyranny. And I'm like, no, the Second Amendment doesn't do anything but just outline a pre-existing God-given duty to be a defender of innocent blood and defender of all things good. And that's what we focus on here. So all of you that are listening on Liberty Tree Radio that aren't used to hearing this Christian crusader attitude, it's not your fault that you haven't heard it, but you've got to listen to it now that we're presenting it. Don't turn it off. Don't close your ears. Don't go, oh, my pastor would be so upset. I had somebody write me earlier say, oh, I'm going to go to hell, my friend says, because I'm listening to this kind of stuff. As a joke, he said it. Because, you know, he went to his pastor and said, why aren't you teaching the stuff they're teaching, you know, Pastor Warren Mark Campbell is? Oh, my job is just to preach salvation and that's it. No, it's not. That may be your job as a pastor, but you're still a Christian man. Every pastor is still a Christian man. And you still have a duty as a Christian man or woman to defend innocent blood. And that's what we're talking about here today, ladies and gentlemen. And we've got training, all kinds of training. It all doesn't cost. The Code 20 training costs because you get what you pay for. And you're getting a lot for little. Even the cheapest classes now, anywhere else that don't teach you the moral and Christian implications are still more than what we charge. And then once you get here and you get to know us, we'll invite you to do the stuff where we don't charge, the in-house training that we do. But you've got to fellowship with us first and show us who you are. And once you do that and you show the dedication, and remember what I taught you a few weeks ago, training is fellowship and fellowship should be sacrificial. So that's why. The $100 hardly covers the cost of the time and the gas and all that stuff. So don't be focusing on that. Focus on what you're going to be taking away. The notebook full of information you're going to get out of Steve's class on SMEAC, on the threats, on how to put together cell warfare will apply to any enemy. It'll apply to any enemy that we may face in the future. We're focusing on Islam because it's one of the many points of the weapon at us, but you got to take them one at a time. You got to take them one at a time, study your enemy, and know your enemy. Don't treat each enemy the same. So that's why we're doing it. Isn't that right, Steve?
Absolutely. And during lunchtime, we're going to show, like we talked about it last week, we're going to show video clips of the 101st Airborne with fantastic soldiers, fabulous equipment, and they walk into an ambush. They get their ass kicked. You're going to see it's the actual combat. It's in a clip, or actually a movie that Dutch has, and the name of it is Restrepo. You spell that R-E-S-T, like to take a rest, R-E-P-O, Restrepo, which was the name of a medic, a very brave medic who was shot to death in Afghanistan. And we're going to talk about how cell warfare, you're able to asymmetrically overcome odds with much better trained soldiers, much better equipped, very brave, very intelligent men, the 101st Airborne. We're also going to show clips from the Battle of Algiers. Once again, asymmetric warfare, guerrilla warfare, fourth generation warfare, all the names you want to call it, where folks with low-tech overcome high-tech. But also in that, you're going to see the colonel in charge of the French, who was actually in the battles against the Viet Minh in Vietnam before we got into the war. And he goes through and he diagrams how cell warfare actually works. So you're going to see that. You're not going to get that training anywhere in the United States, not even at the military academies or the different war colleges, because those guys, they've gone back to training like World War II type tactics. It's crazy. Okay, also in there, we're going to talk to you once again where it says overcome evil with good. Well, we're going to define when you do nothing and somebody's going to rape your wife or kill your children, if you do nothing, that is evil. You are not overcoming evil with good by praying and doing nothing. If you pray and you work and you act and you kill, that's good. And if you die, I'm confident, as long as you're born again, you will soon be in the presence of Jesus, and you'll hear him say, well done, good and faithful servant. And then adding to what Dutch said, when the pastors say, I only want to preach about salvation, well, guess what, Pastor? I've been able to talk and lead a number of Iraqi and Afghani veterans coming back to salvation by using Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10, and the law of the nations, the law written on the heart, and I explained to the kids, didn't you just say, give me liberty or give me death? And they look at me like, what? And I said, didn't you just go to combat so that you could have liberty? Yeah. Well, I said, isn't that like Patrick Henry? And I explain it. Yeah. Didn't you raise your right hand to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic? Well, yeah. And then I ask them, boom, son, do you know what the law of nations is? And they go, no. So I take them to the Constitution. I said, you know what that is? That's the law written on the heart. And I explain it, and then I tell them, you know what? Romans 3:31 says, do we annul the law by faith? No. We establish the law written on the heart. Jeremiah 31:33, Hebrews 8:10, Hebrews 10:16. And these kids, all of a sudden, I remember one kid very dramatically, I can't get rid of him now. I was talking to him, I was talking to him about 7 months. He did two tours in Iraq. And I said, hey, I said, do you understand what the law of nations is? He goes, I don't care anything about Christianity because all you guys do is argue, is it a wafer or is it real wine or is it fake wine or do you baptize or you dip? I said, wait a minute, just give me a break here. Tell me, didn't you risk your life for the Constitution? And he looked at me like, what? So I had to work him through that. And finally he said, yeah, I guess I did. I said, well, the law of nations is the law written on the heart. It's the Ten Commandments, and the first one is you've got to accept Christ. You'll have no other gods. And the kid's looking at me like, I didn't know that. And now he's a truck driver, and he's passing out gospel tracts and doing all kinds of other stuff. I can't get rid of him. So the pastor is guilty of dereliction of duty.
Yeah.
Dutch and I are nailing it big time. Dutch and I are hitting bullseye after bullseye after bullseye. So once again, we're kicking ass and we're taking names for Jesus. If you're not man enough to handle this, take your balls and get out of here. We don't want you. We're looking for real men. You know what? I've had a lot of people, women in particular, have done a lot of public speaking in the last 6 months, and they're coming out and they're walking up to me and they're going, I'm so glad. You're really brutal, but I'm so tired of men being sissies and effeminate and castrated.
Yeah. Yeah, I still love when I stood up in church. I think the last time you spoke at our church, and there were some people that weren't invited at the last minute. They were just tourists or something. And there was, you know, the young soccer mom-looking potential lady with, you know, dyed, bleached hair and the nails. And you said something about, what's wrong with the men in America's church today? And I yelled, they're chickified. And she turned around and gave me this really dirty look, and then Stacy kind of like growled at her, and she turned back around. But it was funny the whole time. She was like, oh, my God, what kind of church am I in? And her husband, who was sitting behind me, because he took the baby to the back because the baby was making noise, and I always sit in the back tactically in case some idiot comes in to do something. And so I'm back there watching him, and he's nodding his head. He's loving it. And then during chow, she's like, did you listen to anything? I said, oh, yeah. What'd you think of it? Well, what do you think of it, honey? And I'm like, oh, this is pathetic. This guy's not coming back here ever, no matter. They came in from the, you know, San Francisco or something. But it's just like, no. The women are the leaders of the households in America. The men are portrayed as idiots throughout our media, so they think they just have to earn the money, come home, and be stupid. They don't have anything. And it works out for them. Some of them like it. Men love this. They don't have a duty to defend anymore, they think. And they've taken that role wholeheartedly, especially Christian men. Oh, I'm touchy-feely now. I'm a Christian man. You know, I'm just going to love my enemy. You know, it doesn't matter if he kills my whole family. Go ahead.
strange pistol.
Oh, you're cutting out.
The gal, is that any better?
Go ahead.
Any better?
You're good right there. I can hear you. I can hear you now.
Okay. I lean back. The gals just gravitated towards you and Sergeant R. I mean, Sergeant R is in full battle gear.
I love that.
And they were very, very nice, very feminine gals, and they just gravitated to Dutch and to Sergeant R. And they had told me before they went out there that they were so disappointed that their husbands and sons and brothers and uncles just absolutely wanted nothing at all to do with what we were doing. And so I know there's a craving now. We've gone off the deep end with the feminism, but we're coming back. Yeah, I got two different things here where in Serbia, we were attacking and blowing up the churches, helping Al-Qaeda. We've documented that. Dutch has seen that. I've shown the proof on it. It's all right there. But now what's happening is that the State Department is taking millions and millions and millions of our dollars and rebuilding mosques in Egypt and in Iraq.
Wow.
And yet the Egyptian army, I'm looking in an article here where they went 66 miles out into the desert. Because what happens, the Middle East Christians, to get away from the Muslims, they go long distances way out into the desert, and they build churches with nothing around it, and they drive all the way out there. That way they can worship, and the Muslims won't come in and bother them and rape them and shoot them. However, now in the stuff that's going on with the Muslim Brotherhood taking over the government in Egypt, the Muslims drove 66 miles out into the desert, which doesn't sound like a lot to us as Americans, but for them, that's like going 1,000 miles or so.
Yeah.
And they're taking RPGs, rifles, they're shooting the pastors, they're bulldozing the fences, knocking these down. And at the same time, the State Department is sending hundreds of millions of our dollars to rebuild and refurbish a number of mosques in Egypt and in Iraq, thinking once again, well, you know, if we just show them the better side of America, they'll all love us, which is absolutely insane. Yeah, what they do is they're like con artists that sell you a car with no engine or no transmission, and you bend over backwards to help this guy rip you off. So the Muslims, in fact, they get bounty points. If they rip off a kafir, they rip off an infidel, they get all kinds of awards and points and frequent flyer mileage, just being a little silly there. So this is going on right now as we speak in Egypt and in Iraq, and I think we are doing it also in Libya and some of the other countries over there, you know, that are controlled by the Muslims. So once again, we're doing all we can to destroy our soldiers, Restrepo, leading them into ambushes. The reason the kids get ambushed is because the colonel and the captain in charge think they can dialogue with the elders of the village, who are all Taliban. They're all murderers wanting to kill our kids, and they tell them, what they tell them, Dutch? They're going to build them a road or a freeway or
build
something.
Build them a road,
there.
Make everybody very rich, get money for everybody. They're going to build roads for commerce and, you know, and they've been living in mud huts since the beginning of time. They don't want a road. There's a reason they like having it be a terrible place to get into. They don't want people to invade it. And then what was funny is right afterwards, you can hear the same people on the radio calling Al-Qaeda, the same village elders saying, we are 100% with you. We will fight with Al-Qaeda. We are against the infidel. And he goes, look, you can hear them on the radio saying that they're going to fight with Al-Qaeda. After they gave them, you know, they gave them little juice packs and bottled water and maybe more hair dye for those weird beard colors they had.
Dude, those are some weird-looking colors. I think that was natural, too. That was weird-looking.
Yeah, and that's something they just do, I guess. They, you know, part of their... Cause
they're some weird dudes.
Yeah, so... But they were just willfully, you know, going right in. And the big the thing about Restrepo that I liked is the whole time the issue was about this cow that the soldiers had butchered and eaten. And they wanted to pay like $300 in American currency. And, of course, they were taking that $300 and bought ammo or whatever with it. So they said, we'll give you beans and rice. Well, the beans and rice still went to feed Al-Qaeda. So it didn't really matter. But it's funny, a cow gets stuck in the concertina, so they eat it. I was like, yeah, you know, good for them. I'm glad that at least they know how to butcher a cow still in the U.S. Army.
It was interesting. Okay, so we got SMEAC with Situation, Mission, Execution, Administration, Command, and Communication. So the first class that went through our training, they already did S for Situation, which is broken down into environment, knowing your friendlies, knowing your enemy. Under that environment, they're not talking today, in today's war, they're not talking so much topography, mountainous, or jungle, more than they're talking about the environment of our media, of our leaders, like Admiral Mullen, the idiot that doesn't know what to do with pirates, Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10, tells you you kill them. And here's the admiral in charge of our entire military. He wants more Muslims, and he wants queers in the military. So we'll go over that S, and then Dutch reinforces it with the rules of engagement, with the laws of California, with the ethics and morality of shooting, the safety of shooting. And then the repeat students are going to get the second letter of SMEAC, the M for mission, and we'll be going through WWMD, what would Mohammed do, PMS, power, money, and sex, RPM, religious, political, and military, MPH, Muslims per host, and then we'll build on that, and then we will build our mission. Well, what is our mission, really? In the long run, our mission, as Islam unfolds more and more rapidly, whether they're part of the New World Order, outside of it, in control of it, or the New World Order is in control of them, when they're coming to cut your head off and they're coming to rape your wife, at that point in time, it really doesn't matter. But you've got WWMD, PMS, RPM, MPH, and that leads us to the mission, which is DAMN, D-A-M-N, deport all Muslims now. Now, I can hear everybody gasping, you know, First Amendment, freedom of religion, you can't have religious tests. Well, remember, the Constitution, as good as it is not a standalone document. And this confuses a lot of First Amendment and constitutional attorneys. Frankly, they were really never trained on the Anglo-American common law, the Justice Story, and our original justices were. For example, we have been repeating and repeating and repeating Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10, in this phenomenon called the Law of Nations. The Law of Nations 500, 600, 700, 800, 900, maybe even 1,100, 1,200 years old. It precedes, it was before the Constitution, and it's superior to the Constitution because it says, in Article 1, Section 8, Clause 10, Congress determines how to take care of pirates in accordance with the Law of Nations. That means the Law of Nations is higher than the Constitution. It means that the Law of Nations existed before the Constitution, then it's transcendent because it's the law written on the heart. So in the military, when we were given operations orders, they always would say IAW, which means in accordance with. So the Constitution really is written in accordance with the Law of Nations. Now, I know that's confusing a lot of people out there. Well, come to our training, and I'll explain it to you,
right,
and I'll go through it with you. And that's how we used to do things in the military up until about 40 years ago. So, and once again, you can use that Law of Nations, the law written on the heart, to lead young people or old people, but you can really use it to open the eyes of soldiers and Marines coming back who are battle-hardened, bitter, they've been stabbed in the back, they don't want to come home. Could you, Dutch, dude, when I came home from Vietnam, and then my parents wanted me to go to church. I walk into church, I'm looking at this fruitcake up there in the pulpit, and I'm going, I'm used to going on ambush every day, every night,
yeah,
and being around manly men, and this screwball is up there dancing around, and I act like a fruitcake. And no wonder I walked away from Christianity for years and years. So anyways, that Law of Nations is really powerful. Okay, so what I'm leading up to is this thing where people say, well, we have to allow every religion into the United States. No, we don't. In fact, we've always regulated religion, and the religion of the United States was Protestantism. That's easily provable and documented through Democracy in America, the unabridged version. So what I'm saying is that we can we not amend the Constitution with two-thirds of the people or so many of the congressmen? Yes, we can. So it's a man-made document. Yes, we can. When things fall apart, I don't know, 5 years, 20 years, what do you think, Dutch, 30 years?
I don't know. I thought it would be my son's kids, but now I'm starting to think maybe within the next 5 years.
It's hard to tell, but one of the things we'll have to do in the alter or abolish, the Declaration of Independence, alter or abolish, and reinstitute,
yeah.
right? And that's
right.
in Federalist Paper number 78. We'll have to recreate our own government, and that brings us right back to where we've always been talking about. You have to have the right theology. You have to arm. You have to have 3 to 5 families. You have to organize, which is create a government, and prepare. And that brings us right back to Romans 13:3. God ordains government, and God ordains Christ-like war. So we can protect our people. And that's all Dutch and myself and Pastor Warren Campbell are doing. If you don't understand it, pay the $100 and come out here. I mean, I've been involved in 6 First Amendment lawsuits. I got a team of attorneys, 3 attorneys who works for me. We go out, we went out using the First Amendment today. We reached like 5,000 kids and told them about the pervert Muhammad. Dutch and I are 2 of the best guys in the United States you're going to run into.
Hopefully.
$100.
Yeah.
$100. And besides, you get to meet Lou and Stacy too.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping there, you know, we find more. Everybody talks about the remnant. I've been using the term residue because there's so few of us left. But it only takes a residue to train the rest of them. We just need a few sheepdogs. We just need a few sheepdogs. You were talking about, you look at Captain John Smith, one of the founders. I consider him the father of our country, actually. A lot of people get mad because I'm not disrespecting Washington, but I go back farther to the Virginia colonies. And Captain John Smith was a Muslim killer. There was a monument put out on an island, I think it's Star Island off the coast, with the 3 heads of the 3 potentate Muslims that he killed during one of the latter parts of the Crusades. And the early founding fathers all warned, do not let Mohammedists, that's what they called it back then, Mohammedists in. The first mosque in America was not allowed until, and it snuck into North Dakota in 1920-something. They did everything they could to keep the Mohammedists out because they knew, because the founding fathers and the early Americans knew what they did to Europe. You know, there's a reason that Columbus was sailing looking for an alternate route for trade, because the Muslims had conquered Europe and had tied everything up. And it just, for some reason, the bulk of people have forgotten the lessons of our fathers.
Yep.
And they are an enemy. They're a valid enemy. You had mentioned the Articles of Confederation. Somebody asked, you know, what is your opinion of the Articles of Confederation? Obviously, you consider them a foundational document.
The Federalist Papers, the Articles of Confederation, I really haven't studied them that much. However,
okay.
They work very good. The only reason they didn't work, they're very similar to the Constitution. The only reason they really didn't work is they didn't have a basis for proper taxation. And the only thing they wanted to tax for was for the militia and for the Navy and the Marines, especially the Navy and the Marines. So the Articles of Confederation were a great first attempt. There was some problems with it. And then in 1787 to 1789, George Washington and a number of the fellows met together and they revised them once again, because the Articles of Confederation were a man-made document. They knew there was problems.
Mm-hmm.
So they went to the Constitution and they said, you know what, we can't predict in 200 years what religion is going to be here, so we are allowing and writing into the law that this is man-made law and that it can be amended. One of the really interesting things that was written at the very first thing with the Articles of Confederation was Article 3 of the Northwest Ordinance, it said good government is based upon proper religion, which in those days it meant the Protestantism that was found up there in New England. And then that was in 1784. In 1787, that was the very first thing ratified again, pointing out that religion is the basis of good government, which goes back to that couplet that you and I know so well, and that is the practical application of our deepest held and most cherished beliefs is known as politics. And of course, our deepest held and most cherished beliefs are known as religion. So that's why Muslim soldiers use widows and orphans as shields, whereas our soldiers use their own bodies to shield widows and orphans, our most cherished and deepest held beliefs. So we should be animated. We should be passionate. We should be righteously indignant and angry when people want to murder the unborn, be pedophiles, and especially when they want to bring Islam into the United States and destroy what we have. Crystal, Dutch and myself are working on this. Pastor Warren, we've got Code 20. England, Bosnia, Pakistan. The Pakistani Christians have been absolutely fabulous, and you'll get to meet some of them if you come to the Code 20 training. We've got folks in Australia, Austria, China. We've got them all over the United States. It's going, actually, I'm surprised it's going this fast as it is, but Islam is our best public relations man, because as Islam gets what it is, meaner and meaner, uglier and uglier, more and more evil, then it's only going to be real men like us. So, once again, ladies, let the men do it. Gals, watch cage fighting. Do you ever see any girls get in there and cage fight with the guys?
I don't know. No. Are there any female cage fighters, Lou?
Not with guys.
Not with guys.
And cage fighting is sissyville compared to combat. I've never seen anybody in cage fighting that's had to avoid an RPG, an M4, an AK-47, a claymore, a bayonet. Yeah, I mean, come on.
An eye gouge. Lou said an eye gouge. Yeah, they don't eye gouge. They can't hit in the knee. They got all kinds of rules. Not that I'd want to fight one of those guys, but, I mean, toe-to-toe, they got a lot of limits.
They have a lot of... You get into combat, limits are out. It's do or die. So I'm going to shut up and let you close the show. You did a great job. Thanks, my friend.
Well, Steve, yeah, we got about a minute left here. So just a reminder, and you guys have been doing it, send me the contact info. I will forward it to Captain Steve here. He will get the information. He will get back to you. And if you don't get back to him, he's just going to drop you. He's not here to hold your hand. He's not here to make you feel good about yourself. He's looking for people that are ready to go, hey, I'm looking to host maybe 3 or 4 families in my area, get them ready, and I want you guys to start sending me typewritten information. We'll do that. We'll send you links to videos. I'll mail you stuff. And then once you get big enough, you pay for his airfare. He'll come out anywhere in the United States, I think. And, you know, you may have a couple places you won't go. But he'll train you, and he'll be there. I can't say that I'll be there. I'm the range guy. You have to come here for the range training. Or we'll try and locate a range in your area. We'll work something out. But until we network and get to know each other, we're not going to be able to do that. So you've got to not just email Dutch and go, Dutch, I really like this Code 20 thing. When Steve gets back to you, you better be going, okay, here's what I need to do. Here's what I got. And we got the music playing there. Our God is an awesome God. He reigns. He sure does. He made us awesome promises. He's asked us to stand in the gap. He's asked us to stand for righteousness and defend innocent blood. Here's your chance to do it, folks. We're not offensive, we're defensive, but the minute it starts, we become offensive. We're like the coiled snake on the Gadsden flag. Fangs are out, fangs out, and we're ready to go. But, we can't do it alone. And you're not going to survive alone just by reading books and listening to this radio show. You got to get your hands on the weapon. You got to get your mind around these concepts. You have to sit in a classroom and be able to integrate and participate. Or it's not going to happen for you. There's no such thing as an armchair warrior. There's no such thing as a couch potato hero.